This episode is brought to you in part by our own Basic Brewing Brewer's Logbook, with room for logging the details of up to 50 batches of beer and a handy calendar where you can track your brews. The Brewer's Logbook is the perfect kettle-side brewing companion. Check it out at basicbrewingshop.com. That's basicbrewingshop.com. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, August 29th, 2019. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, Mika Laitinen, author of Viking Age Brew, The Craft of Brewing Sati Farmhouse Ale, joins us to talk about ancient beer in Finland and gives us advice on brewing our own Sati-like beers wherever we are. If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows. And if you go to basicbrewingshop.com, you can find our stuff. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Basic Brewing and find our show page on Facebook. We have a cool Basic Brewing app on iTunes and Amazon.com, and we're found all over the place where fine podcasts are served up. And if you do us the favor of rating us on iTunes and maybe leaving a nice comment there, they say that'll help new listeners to find us. If you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing. And thanks to everybody who's helping out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. Steve and I shot a Basic Brewing video episode last night where we tasted my version of Sati. I'm planning to post that next week. Financial supporters will get to see it early, along with an exclusive behind-the-scenes video and the recipe. So thanks again to all of y'all who are helping to keep this endeavor going. Let's take a quick look into the mailbag. Cody from Antigonish, Nova Scotia, up in Canada, writes, after hearing about my comments to Scott Janish about my fermenter that uses a jar to collect trub, I was worried about oxygen blooping up through the finished beer when I, you know, reattached the empty jar and opened the valve after dumping. Cody says, I have a solution, or at least something you could try in regards to oxidation from your jar dump off your unnamed fermenter. If you don't use kegs and therefore don't have CO2 kicking around, you could always try dumping some carbonated water in your jar before reattaching. I don't believe you would need to add much to get the desired effect. The CO2 escaping solution would act similar to purging the jar, as if you had a hose nearby to flush with gas directly. Cody says, this was a tip I read years ago from Five Blades Brewing when doing kettle sours. Lacto and oxygen can result in some pretty bad smells, as you most likely are aware of. Yeah. They said you could use this trick to purge the kettle's headspace before wrapping it up. Well, thanks, Cody. That's an interesting idea. If you don't have a tank of CO2 around, you could liberate some CO2 from carbonated water. Or, I got to thinking, you could take that idea one step further. I thought, what if you had some beer that was similar to the beer that you have in the fermenter? You could fill up the jar with that beer and reattach it. And that way, when you open the valve, very little air would be present, and the added beer would just, you know, kind of blend in with the fermenter beer. I sent that idea to Cody, and Cody replied, I thought of the same thing while I was driving home from work yesterday. One could wait until they were drinking a similar beer and use it so as not to influence any off flavors, or just roll with it and call it a blend, or just dispense from a nearby tap right into the jar. So there you go. Great minds think alike. I appreciate the exchange, Cody. Another issue on the homebrew front solved. Let's talk about our friends and sponsors, Desiree and Dave from High Gravity in Tulsa. In this episode, I talked to Mika about my plans to brew a Sati with my Warthog electric system from highgravitybrew.com. I had planned to dig out my old cylindrical water cooler mash tun out of the dust in the basement to louder in order to mimic the old ways, the traditional ways of brewing Sati. But, you know, the more I thought about it, the less that I knew that that was necessary. Using the recirculating pump that I got with my 10-gallon 240-volt system, I was able to easily raise the gravity of the wort to my target range without doing any kind of loudering. I ran the pump, which took the wort off the bottom of the kettle and sprayed it onto the top of the mash. So it's kind of like a constant Vorloff during the mash. And in addition to that, I stirred every 10 or 15 minutes to increase the efficiency even more. So it worked out. I got it in a, with the recipe that I had. I got it an original gravity of 1082. So I've said multiple times that this is a beer that I wouldn't have tried without this gear from High Gravity. A Warthog system from highgravitybrew.com not only takes the pain out of propane, it has taken my brewing to the next level. And High Gravity has a selection of other electric brewing options too, in addition to their extensive line of Warthog system configurations. If you're handy, unlike me, you can just pick up a Warthog controller on its own and add it to your own system. Check out all the electric brewing options at family-owned and operated highgravitybrew.com. And if you use the promo code EBC75BBE, you can save $75 off your electric gear purchase. That's at highgravitybrew.com. Okay, this was a fun chat. Let's talk to Mika Laitinen in Finland about brewing Sati. Mika Laitinen, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thank you.
I read your book, Viking Age Brew, The Craft of Making Sati Farmhouse Ale, and it's really fascinating, and it's kind of surprising to me. I mean, these are ancient brews that you talk about, and it seems like just now they're starting to break into the light of day and get attention in the craft brewing world. It's kind of ironic. So why do you think that Sati and these related farmhouse brews are getting attention just now?
These farmhouse brewers, they don't make noise about themselves. They have brewed their family style beer, and they don't feel urge to shout about it. So in the last few years, some of the beer writers have started to explore this kind of farmhouse ales and publish things about these beers. But it is true that it is surprising how secret this has been.
And you write about not only about Sati, which is Finnish in origin, correct? But you also write about farmhouse ales in the surrounding region.
Yes. There are few surviving examples of really ancient farmhouse brews. We have Kotuolu in Estonia in the Baltic region, and then there's Kaimiskas beers in Lithuania, and malt ale in Norway, and Gotlandstrik in island of Gotland in Sweden. So all these beers are very much part of the same family of farmhouse beers, and I find it easier to speak about the whole group of these farmhouse beers than just pick one style of beer.
And it's even within the world of Sati, it seems like it's hard to nail down a description of what it is, because it seems to vary not only in brewing procedure, but in ingredients and in the final character of the beer. It seems to vary from region to region and farmhouse to farmhouse and brewer to brewer.
Yes, there is a very high variation from brewer to brewer, and it is really difficult to give some kind of a style guidelines or general description.
So for those who don't have any information about Sati whatsoever, how do you describe it to them? How do you, since it is a style kind of without boundaries, how do you characterize it in a way that they can understand? Are there common characteristics that makes it a Sati?
Well, a Sati is a traditional farmhouse beer that was born in farmhouses at least 1,000 years ago. So that's the way I think about Sati, that, and the brewing technique should reflect that history of Sati there. In old times, they didn't have modern luxuries like big metal kettles or thermometers or brewer's yeast. Also, one important aspect of Sahti is that it is a feast ale. And in the Nordic countries, the feast beers were the best beers and the farmhouses could brew. So they should be very strong and rich in taste. So that is also one important aspect of Sahti.
And also being fest beers, they are brewed for a specific date, and they are usually consumed fresh, right?
Yes, they are usually consumed mostly in a feast.
And we'll get into, there may be reasons which we'll get into, you know, in talking about the recipes and the brewing techniques, but there may be a reason that they are to be consumed fresh as opposed to held over a long period of time.
Yes, the old brewing techniques, they produce good beer, but it doesn't preserve very well. So it's kind of makes sense to drink it while you have it and while it is good.
Well, let's start talking about the equipment. The traditional equipment, you said that they don't, you know, in the ancient times, they didn't have big metal kettles. So what kinds of equipment do we see in traditional farmhouse brewed sati?
In old times, they used to have only two big brewing vessels. One was a big wooden vat for mashing. And then there was another vessel for lautering. And that was, in Sahti brewers usually used what we call kurna. It is a hollowed out log, which is, the filter is made from straw and juniper branches, and then the mash is scooped on top of those, and they get filtered through juniper branches and straw.
And so the brew gets some flavor from the juniper while it's getting filtered as well.
Yeah, and also juniper is used in other parts of the process as well. It is used to clean the wooden vessels, and it can be also used as a to make a what we call juniper infusion, to add more flavor of juniper into Sahti.
And you say that juniper also has an antiseptic or sanitizing quality as well.
Yeah, this juniper infusion is kind of an ancient sanitizer of farmhouse people.
Which is handy.
It is really handy. And down here in the Nordic countries, juniper grows everywhere. I could just go to my backyard and pick some juniper branches in any day of the year. Just pick branches and begin to brew with them.
Now, is there a certain time of year that the juniper branches are better? Is it better to brew with them while there are fresh tips on them, or is it better to get them, you know, when they're more woody, or is there, you know, a particular type of juniper branch that's better than others?
Juniper is good to brew any time of the year, but the flavor varies. It is strongest at in the summertime. Perhaps now it is pretty strong, and the farmers brewers take this into account. They use slightly less juniper this time of the year because it gives a stronger flavor.
And we have juniper here in the United States, but according to your resources, the juniper character over here is different from where you are?
Yeah, many people have said that juniper in the United States can be very different. And just 2 weeks ago, I was in Bend, Oregon, and I picked few juniper berries and crushed them in my hands, and it was very different, kind of very hard solventy type of flavor.
Huh. So do you think it's still appropriate if you use smaller amounts?
It depends. Some people say that they don't like some junipers that grow in America, but of course also you have a very high variation of juniper, and I would say that if it tastes good, then you can prove it.
That seems like a good rule to follow in general.
Yeah, and if the aroma is like a paint thinner, then perhaps you then should skip this ingredient.
Yeah, that's also good advice. So the equipment. I'm assuming that you can have a small metal vessel to heat water in, to transfer into the mash tun, and to use for lautering in the. It looks kind of like a canoe without the pointy ends, the hollowed out log. So you've got to have a way to heat the water to get it into the other wooden containers.
Yeah, in the old times, people used to have some smaller kettles, but not really big ones, which would be big enough for heating wort. But often in old times, people used to have a very small kettles for heating water, and then they also used hot stones to increase the temperature in mash. So they threw hot stones into the mash.
Ah, like a German Steinbier.
Yeah, that is part of the same traditions, just to get heat into the mash without a kettle.
I observed a brewing session in Oklahoma a few years ago where they took stones and heated them over a fire and put them in a converted keg brew kettle, and I was assuming that the stones would cool down fairly quickly, and that they wouldn't be able to maintain a boil very well. But I was shocked. I mean, by using these stones, and then they put them in a metal basket so they could take them out and reheat them and put more hot stones in, they were able to maintain a rolling boil quite easily. So you could see where you could use that to heat your mash as well and do that. Of course, it takes a lot more energy. It takes a lot more work, but you can still do it.
Yeah, this stone boiling the mash is very impressive sight. I have seen it once, and there was a lot of splashes of mash into air, and the brewer had to stir the vessel very fast in order to avoid burning of his wooden vat.
Mm. So let's talk about ingredients. Other than the juniper and the juniper infusions, what does our malt bill look like?
Usually it is very simple. It is mostly barley malt, pale barley malt, something like Pilsner or Vienna type. And then there's some rye malt. Some brewers use just barley malt, but I would say typical Sahti always has a small amount of dark rye malt in the mash.
And what gravities, what initial gravities are we shooting for?
Since these are the best farmhouse beers and the best feast beers, the gravity should be very high. That's what the people in the farmhouses like to have, and my Sahti is typically around 23 Plato, and some brewers go even higher than that, but I think something between 19 to 25 Plato is very typical for Sahti.
So in the specific gravity scale, we're approaching 1.100. Which is, it's a big beer.
Yeah, and it is a bit difficult to brew at first if you brewing first time this kind of beer, because there's no boiling step and you cannot steam off the extra water. So you have to be really careful not to dilute your mash and wort too much.
Yeah, I want to talk about that, but before we get off the malt bill, there is a malt product over there in Finland that is Sati malt, right? That is just a commercial brand of malt that is designed for Satis.
Yes, it is made by a Finnish malt house, but it is mostly made of Pilsner malt. So I think Pilsner malt is a good substitute for that.
And what color should we be shooting for? And I've seen there are nice color photos in the book, and they show kind of a rainbow of different colors of different satis. But what color range should we be shooting for with a sati?
The typical sati color is something like reddish brown or amber color.
So no super dark satis.
It is more rare. Some people brew quite dark, something like a cola color. But the problem with very dark satis is that when the beer is drunk very fresh, there's no any time for roasted flavors to melt down. So it is best to avoid the most big loads of roasted malts.
So you referred to the brew not being boiled. Although some farmhouses do boil their mash, either the mash and or their wort as well. So again, traditions differ between farmhouse to farmhouse.
Yes, there is a lot of variation. I think the mash boil is traditional, because in old times it was done with stones, and stones caused the mash to boil. But the wort boil, although some sahti brewers are doing it today, I think it's more modern invention, because there's no way brewers could have done wort boil easily in old times.
So talk about the mash schedule. It starts low and it goes slow, right? it seems like a most of the day kind of an affair.
Yeah, I have told these farmhouse brewers who brew strictly by the family tradition that you don't actually need such a long mash, but they just ignore me. They tell me that's the way we have always done it, and that's the way we are doing it.
So even though today's malts are modified well enough to where a short mash would be just fine, they still spend several hours and different temperature ranges in this process.
Yes, the typical sahti mash takes something like 5 to 8 hours, and people usually start at very low temperature, like hand warm temperatures, and then start adding water in several steps, and finally they go into very high temperatures. So it's kind of step mashing where you don't need a thermometer, because you are going through all the necessary temperatures of mashing.
And you say you wind up, how high do you wind up at the end of the mash, temperature wise?
It depends a lot on the brewer. Few times I have measured the true farmhouse brewers during the brew day, and sometimes it's around 70 Celsius, which is something like 155 Fahrenheit. And then I usually go to 80 Celsius, which is 176 Fahrenheit. But some brewers go up to the boiling of mash.
Hmm. And so it's so you say it's a raw ale, but especially if you go up to 80 degrees Celsius or 176 degrees Fahrenheit, and especially if you stay at that level for any period of time, you may not be boiling, but it's probably pasteurizing the wort, right?
Yes, it is pasteurizing, and I have done this kind of raw ales many times, and when I have used the yeast, which doesn't contain any bacteria, it has never gone sour.
So is you're actually denaturing, or you're killing the bacteria that lives naturally on the malt at that point, and if you can keep your pitch clean, then maybe the beer will stay fresher longer and not sour. But the yeast that you use, or traditionally is used for the sati, is not a brewer's yeast.
Yes, sati is typically fermented with baker's yeast, and that contains some lactic bacteria, and it will go sour at some point. But the brewer's goal is to serve the beer as a non-sour. And so the traditional pharma techniques have evolved how to produce some non-sour beer, even though there's some bacteria involved in the yeast.
Hence the need to drink it fresh.
Yes, that is one reason to drink it fresh, and also reason to store the sahti cool before the feast.
At what temperature is the yeast pitched?
It varies a lot from brewer to brewer, and it depends also how strong flavors people want from baker's yeast. Some brewers ferment around room temperature, which here in Finland means something like 68 Fahrenheit. And some brewers go higher than that, something like 75 Fahrenheit. And that is already quite high. And some brewers are targeting for lower temperatures to get a maltier and less fruity sahti.
Mm-hmm. And what kinds of character does the baker's yeast give to the beer?
Finnish sahti brewers usually use Finnish fresh compressed baker's yeast, which is very strong in flavor. It produces a lot of banana esters and clove type spicy flavors, and it's really rustic flavors. And I have tested also some other baker's yeast, and usually they are not so spicy. They are more like a fruity kind of producing fruity flavors, but not banana aromas.
Hmm. At the Homebrewers Conference in June, we sampled a sati that it was delicious. It was brewed with Hefeweizen yeast. So there was, a bit of banana and some clove in there, but it was nice and it was kind of like a dessert beer because it was fairly sweet. We should also say that there's no hops used in there, so the bitterness may have to come from juniper or something like that. But it was a delicious beer. I don't know how accurate and faithful it was to to the traditional styles, but it was delicious. But let's talk about hops. How frequently are they used in sati?
Some sati brewers use hops, but the amount of hops is very little. It's so little that it doesn't give any flavor, and it just doesn't preserve the beer. So my conclusion is that sati can be brewed without any hops, and it doesn't make any difference to that. Add just a few hop cones into sati.
And because of the extended mash, I mean, this is a big beer. How does the extended mash affect the attenuation? Is an authentic sati, is it still sweet, or does the extended mash break down the starches to be more, you know, fermentable, so that it's sort of, you know, more the mouthfeel of a standard beer?
Traditional sati is usually quite sweet, but the long mash can make sati wort very fermentable. But the farmer's trick is to stop the fermentation by cellaring the ale before it is completely fermented. So it's kind of it could ferment very dry, but then it wouldn't be so typical sahti. So the people want to be very quick in cellaring the beer before it goes too dry.
What is a typical finishing gravity for sati?
Something like 8 Plato, which is something like 1.030. That is quite typical.
For a big beer, that's still pretty low. if you start out, you know, at 1.100 and get down to 10:30, that's, I guess, if my math is correct, 70% apparent attenuation. So that's, you know, that's still pretty good.
Yeah.
And what's the alcohol by volume?
It is typically between 6% and 9% alcohol. There are also some higher alcohol sahtis, but sahti should also be very drinkable. And I feel that if it's more than 9%, it kind of reduces the drinkability of sahti.
And it's served still most of the time, right?
Yes, usually. Some brewers like to have a very small real ale, like carbonation from residual fermentation, but most sahtis today are almost still.
And is there, I mean, it's difficult for us to get the right kind of juniper over here. It's difficult for us to get the Finnish baker's yeast. You know, we kind of have to estimate, you know, on the malt bill, because, you know, we may not have access to the commercial sati yeast. But what tips can you give? I mean, you just recently got back from touring, you know, the United States and brewing beers sati over here. So what tips can you give us on brewing our own sati-like beverage, no matter where in the world we are?
I feel that it is more important to get the brewing process right than trying to match the ingredients. Sati can be brewed with a wide variation of ingredients, but the brewing process is really the point where this kind of beers get their flavor from. And when we were brewing sahti in Ale Apothecary Brewery in Bend, Oregon, and we didn't use the juniper, we used fir instead of juniper. And then we used Vienna malts. I had some dark rye malts in my bag, and then I also brought some Norwegian farmer's yeast quake, which we used to ferment the beer. And I was really happy about this beer. It wasn't exactly typical sahti in a Finnish kind of way, but it was very good beer, and it showed very well the essence of this kind of farmer's beers.
You mentioning kvike reminding me, I got an email from a listener called Mark in Wolverhampton, UK, and he asked, he says, I brewed my first beer with kvike yeast this weekend, and I know that you've been experimenting with this yeast recently too. The thing that struck me while I was watching my furiously bubbling airlock was, how does a, quote, farmhouse strain such as this, which ferments happily at 35 degrees Celsius, evolve in a freezing cold country like Norway? You would think that this kind of yeast would evolve in a hot country, and a cold country would favor lager strains. It seems totally counterintuitive. So maybe, you know, you're closer up there to the origin of kvike. How did this heat loving yeasts, how do they evolve up in Norway rather than somewhere hot?
In ancient farmhouses throughout the northern Europe, farmers brewers used to have this kind of house yeast, because there was no way they could buy any yeast for their brew. So they used to maintain their own brewing yeast. In the old farmers breweries, it was very difficult to cool down wort, and brewers wanted to add yeast as soon as the wort was below temperature that would kill the yeast. And gradually the yeast, they got used to very high pitching temperatures. And still today there are some brewers in Norway who pitch at 40 Celsius, which is something like 104 Fahrenheit.
That makes sense. That was an excellent explanation. It's not the weather outside, but the temperature of the fermentation vessel that's that counts.
Yeah, and there are many other good qualities about kvake as well, which are really from the farmer's way of brewing.
And you suggest in the book that that brewing a sati with kvike would be a fun thing to do. You might not get the characteristics of a Finnish baker's yeast, but it would still be a tasty beer.
Yeah, well, I must confess that usually when I'm brewing sati, I don't use a baker's yeast, because I like kvike better. It produces better beer in my taste.
Ah, well, there you go. I've got my ingredients, and I've got my kvike strain from Imperial Organic Yeast ready to brew this week. And I was hoping to get some advice, some free advice from you, Mika. Here, since I've got you on the line, I was looking at the recipes. You've got several recipes in the back of the book, and you've got a chapter on how, you know, to brew the sati at home. But I was looking at the simplest recipe, looking to me, and you may have to help me on pronunciation. Is it Heikki Riutta?
Yes, Heikki Riutta.
Okay. He has a recipe for sati. It's a recipe for 25 gallons, and so I had to pare it down to 5. But 74 pounds or 37 kilograms of sati malt, 8 pounds or 4 kilograms of caramel malt at 40 Lovibond, 3.3 ounces or 100 grams of Finnish press compressed baker's yeast. So, simple ingredients. So what I did was I pulled for my 5-gallon batch 15 pounds or 6.8 kilograms of Pilsner malt, 8 ounces or 226 grams of 40 Lovibond crystal, and 1 pound of malted rye or 450 grams of malted rye. So what do you think of my malt bill, first of all?
Sounds good. It will create very good sahti. Not exactly typical, but good sahti.
Good, if I don't ruin it.
Yeah. Well, even in Finland, people can sometimes prove it that kind of malt bill.
Okay, so now's the tricky part. I have an electric brew-in-a-bag kettle that I'm planning on mashing in because the mash schedule for this beer, it says we let the first rest is 122 degrees Fahrenheit or 50 C, and that stands for 2 hours, and then raise the mash temperature to 140 degrees Fahrenheit or 60 C and let that rest for 2 hours. Then over the next 4 hours, bring the temperature gradually to 176 degrees Fahrenheit or 80 C. So, you know, in my traditional, Rubbermaid plastic drinking water cooler that I used to mash in before electric brewing, that would be quite the trick, to raise those temperatures by water infusion and to hold those temperatures for that length of time. So I'm planning on using my electric brew-in-a-bag kettle for the mashing part, and then to transfer it to my Rubbermaid cooler with an ingredient that I don't have spruce, or I don't have juniper, I don't have fir around here in Arkansas, but I do have a big bunch of rosemary, which to me kind of looks, evergreeny. And I thought that I would maybe mix in some rosemary into the mash tun and get some local flavor in that way. So that's a lot of information to toss at you, Mika, but what do you think? What are some strategies that I can use to make this work?
Well, first, the mashing part, you can easily skip the low temperature rests. So you can do just two rests, something like between the basic saccharification temperatures and then some kind of mash out temperature. That will be enough. And if you do it for 2 hours, that is with modern malt, that is enough.
So you say skip the I was kind of looking forward to doing, the 2 hours at this rest and 2 hours at that rest, but you but you say skip it.
Well, it would create a slightly different beer, but it doesn't make a really huge difference. I have tested them side by side, very long and pretty short mashes.
So you've done a taste test and it doesn't make that much difference.
Yes, there's some difference, but not really a big difference. With this kind of raw ales, it is best to do at least 2 hours of mashing because then you cannot use so much water to rinse out the sugars. So that can be compensated with the longer mashing times.
Mm-hmm.
But 2 to 3 hours is enough in my experience.
And then how long for the mash out?
Just to heat it up, something like 15 minutes to half an hour.
Okay. And then since I'm doing brew in a bag, and you say in the book that you don't recommend brew in a bag for this type of thing, but if I'm going to not use infusions to bring the temperature up, What mash thickness would you recommend for my process?
It's a bit difficult to say because in my experience, brew in a bag works better with more diluted mashes. But with sahti, you don't want to have very diluted mashes because you cannot boil off the extra water.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps you should go. You should try a rather thick mash, and then add some kind of rinsing step to rinse the mash back.
Well, one advantage of my system from our sponsors, High Gravity in Tulsa, is that I've got a pump that I can use to pump the wort, you know, from the bottom of the kettle up and sprinkle over the top of the mash during the mash. So that should help, along with some maybe stirring the mash as well during that time period. So it may just be a matter of experimentation and, you know, just kind of seeing how things come out. Do some math on a, you know, my notebook paper and see how it goes, which is another reason to call it a pseudo sati. So that I don't offend any purists.
Yeah, I think it will be anyway a good beer and a good experiment.
And I plan it's hot this week here in Northwest Arkansas, so I'm planning on pitching my Kvik yeast and. Putting it into a fermentation bucket and putting it out on my front porch where it'll probably be around 90 degrees Fahrenheit, which is, what, 33 around there somewhere?
Yeah, something like that.
So I'm hoping that the Kvik yeast will like that and have fun fermenting that.
Yeah, so. And the trick with Kvik yeast is that when you pitch at the right fermentation temperature, the yeast will start very fast, and then it will produce heat to keep the temperature up.
Ah.
So even though if your fermentation is on a lower temperature, the fermentation temperature will be much higher.
So it will generate a lot of heat with all that activity.
Yeah, for the first day or two, and then it will cool down. But anyway, at that point, it is okay to cool the wort.
And I'm planning on transferring to a keg and then putting some CO2 on top of it and then just having enough pressure to push the beer out and not force carbonating in the keg. To keep it, you know, a still beer, sort of in the spirit of a real sati. Wish me luck. I'm inspired by your book. It's a fun book to read. Lots of great pictures. We've only scratched the surface on, you know, talking about sati. There are plenty of details in the book on how to brew it, along with the details about the more traditional or the other traditional beers in the surrounding area. And it's a great read. Viking Age Brew, The Craft of Brewing Sati Farmhouse Ale. So it's been fun. Mika, I appreciate your taking time.
Thanks. I had a fun too. It's a really good session.
Well, thanks again to Mika. Check out Viking Age Brew. And be sure to check out my attempt at brewing sati on next week's Basic Brewing video. In the meantime, if you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to James at basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. And thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page, as usual. Special goodies coming your way soon. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voice, and we'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.